Okay, we're talking about baptism, and I love talking about baptism. I love baptism services. I just think they're brilliant. I love hearing people's stories. I love just the beauty of seeing God at work in other people and hearing what he's done, because we don't always celebrate enough. We're great at talking about stuff that's gone wrong, but sometimes it's good to just stop and hear the good stories and remember the great memories and hear about it. So it's good. And a couple of months ago, I was at the baptism on the beach, the splashdown in the beach, really, in the shallow of the beach. And Dan did this great explanation of baptism, and he compared it to the ice bucket challenge, because it's just like the ice bucket challenge, apart from the ice and the bucket. But it, you know, he was nearly there. But it is a challenge. It is a challenge, because we get baptized first and foremost, because it says too in the Bible, Jesus said, whoever believes and is baptized will be saved. And that's really quite straightforward. But it's also this challenge to say, is this something you really, 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 for real, if you've been watching I'm a Celebrity, believe in? Is it? Is it something that you're prepared to share with everybody all around you? Is it something that you're prepared to stand up and say, I'll do this difficult thing. I'll do it. It's going to be freezing. Sorry, it is. That's not very encouraging. It's going to be freezing, it's weird, it's a little bit different, it's everyone can see, which for a lot of us is quite difficult. But can you do the challenge? I know I got baptized a while ago, when I was 12, quite a long while ago. And my dad said to me, he said, you ought to invite all your friends from school. And I was 12, and I went, I could invite the couple that come along to Sunday school with me, I could do that. And he went, no, you should invite all of them. I was like, really? He said, yeah. He said, because if you're not ready to invite your friends, you're not ready to invite your school, you're not really ready to get baptized. And the challenge was there for me to go, do I really believe in this? Am I really prepared to share it with everybody else? And I went off, this is before computers, and you have to understand, I have no creativity within me whatsoever when it comes to art. And I hand drew some little posters, and I stuck them up around school to invite people to my baptism. Not everywhere, I can't claim that one. I stuck it on the little seat corner of the CU notice board, and then right and kind of slightly behind something else on my tutor group notice board. And I stuck one in the corner of my English room because I liked my English teacher and she was quite nice. And I did it. I took the challenge. I was like, do you know what? This is about proclaiming what I believe in. It matters. Nobody came. That's like, you know, that's a bit of an anticlimax to the story. But actually, for me, that was a really huge step to step out there and go, I am going to tell everybody, even these kids that I don't know, and I'm going to invite them to come and see. And on many, many levels, it didn't matter that they didn't, because this was about me. And it was about me saying who I was. And we've kind of see baptism as this proclamation of faith. And that's who we are and what we do. But actually, if we go back to the Bible when Jesus was telling us to do this, we look at it and we realize that actually Jesus didn't invent baptism. He kind of did, because he's Jesus and he's God and he invented everything. On that level, he did. But on the other level, he didn't. On the other level, it happened an awful lot before Jesus came as a man to earth. It was happening right back in the Jewish nation years and years and years before. Because when the priests went to the temple, and when they went into the Holy of Holies, when they went into the place where God was, they would do this baptism thing, and they would wash themselves, ceremoniously wash themselves, so that they were clean, not of the dust and the dirt of the day, and there was plenty of that, but they were clean of the way that they'd spoken to their wife that morning. And they were clean of the way that they treated their kids yesterday. And they were clean of the fact that actually the day before that, they'd let somebody give them too much change in the shops down the road. I don't mean if they had shops, but you know what I mean. They were clean of that stuff. And they were clean of the way they'd thought about the next door neighbor's wife. And they were clean. They were washing themselves clean. And when you look at it like that, and you see that that's what baptism really was, it was this washing yourself clean, saying, I have a need to get rid of some stuff. Well, then actually, I think the challenge becomes that much bigger. Because me sticking posters on a wall at school was scary enough. Admitting I've done something wrong, whole different story. My husband will tell you that I like to be right. I do. I try not to say something unless I'm very, very sure. But I like to be right, and we all like to be right. We live in a culture of being right. We live in a culture where we've always got somebody to blame, and it's probably our parents and the way they brought us up, or it might be the teachers at school or the person down the road. And we just don't like to be wrong. We have 6 children between us, which is great, because it means I can talk about them without naming them. And they also are going, I know she's talking about me, but nobody else will be absolutely sure, so it's great. One of them, when they were younger, had this great problem with admitting that anything was wrong with them. Not, you know, if they fell over and hurt themselves, that bit was okay. But they struggled if you were telling them off or asking them to do something differently. If you were saying, for example, you know, could you eat your dinner without, you know, your mouth open? That would be great. Or if you were saying, it's really important actually that you pick your clothes up, can you pick them up and take them to your bedroom? They've been lying on the floor for most of the day. Then the answer was never, yes, yeah, sure, sorry. It was always, but I'm not naughty. And it was this desperation of, I'm not naughty. And we're saying, you're not naughty. We didn't say that you were. But let's deal with this thing that is true. And it's a fascinating thing that we find so hard to do. But the truth is, we've all done something wrong, even me. Even me when I'm talking to my husband sometimes. So we've all done something wrong. It says this in Proverbs. It says, no one can say I'm innocent. I've never done anything wrong. And it's not just an Old Testament thing. It goes on to the New Testament too. It says, if we say that we have no sin, well, then we've deceived ourselves and the truth isn't in us. And it's one of those catch-22s. Well, in that case, you've done something wrong. It's true for all of us. But also true is this, okay? I have done lots wrong. And not just the fact that I was incredible, this is confession time, and now my children will be going, yes, when I got in the car this morning. I was fantastically grumpy because trying to get everyone out into the car on time to get here early enough to set up turned out to be rather a challenge. And then we hadn't let the dog out, and I had to go back, and I was cross because we were already gone past the time that I'd asked everyone to be ready for. And it was just, and it took me at least half the journey to get here before I calmed down enough to speak to anyone nicely. So I hadn't said anything at all. So confession time and apology, sorry. But here's a bigger confession. I got a speeding ticket just over a year ago, and I was mortified. I was more mortified because I got the speeding ticket for having gone too fast in my husband's car, which meant the speeding ticket didn't arrive in the post addressed to me. It arrived in the post addressed to him. And he came into the kitchen, this little piece of paper, going, I think this is for you. Which was horrendous, because that means I'm not just wrong, I'm caught out wrong. If you get a speeding ticket, and this isn't speaking from experience, that was my first ever time. If you get a speeding ticket addressed to you, you can just deal with that quietly. Slide it, you know, pay the bill, pay the fine, take the points, do the little course, whatever. Nobody need ever know. When it comes addressed to your husband, everyone knows. Everyone. And my children, my two little ones who look just like me were in the room, and they turned around with their horrified face on, going, Mummy. And I looked at them, and I could see myself looking back at me with my disappointed face. That's an outrage. That's not how genetics is meant to work. Your children are not meant to turn your bad look back on you. It was an awful, awful moment. And my immediate reaction was, well, there must be something wrong. And I took the piece of paper, and I said, well, I don't even know where this is. So I Googled it, and I went, oh, yeah, and I do know where that is now. And yes, I do know why I was there on that particular time. I said, there's not a speed camera there. And I was Googling, and I discovered that it was a 60-mile-an-hour zone, which would have been fine, and they've just changed it to 50. It's caught loads of people, not just me, loads of people. And there's all these complaints and all these things, and I realised that the problem was that my sat-nav is still set to 60, so it didn't bleep to tell me I was going too fast. And I had all these reasons, and mini-me's are still looking back at me going, Mummy. And I got to the point where I went, do you know what? Yeah, it's my fault. I was driving too fast. I wasn't paying enough attention that I saw the great big 50-mile-an-hour zones because I was concentrating on my sat-nav, and I wasn't paying the attention that I was. Fair cop, I got it wrong. Anyway, I was allowed to go on one of these speed awareness courses instead of having to take the points, which was brilliant because my driving license is still clean, which makes it look like I didn't do anything wrong. And I go on this course, which is a little bit embarrassing, but it's okay. I'm not going to make your hands up. But what I will say is this. It's a brilliant course, actually. It made me realize I have forgotten some stuff, and it was fantastic to have a bit of a refresher. Anyway, also fascinating, there were 20 of us on our course. I was the only woman. I just like to say that for women drivers, right? Myself clearly accepted, but yeah. So, 19 men, me. Anyway, we all kind of shuffle into this hotel. You all shuffle into the hotel, and nobody looks at each other because none of you want to admit that's what you're there for. And you've all averting eyes and have a coffee. I can't stop talking for very long. So eventually, I have to say hello to somebody. So I went up and I said hello to this chap, and I said, "Were you here for this, course?" Because that's subtle. Because if he wasn't, I could get away with it. And then he launched into this whole. He made me look tame with my excuses because the speed limit was stupid, the road was stupid, the policeman was an idiot, and it was one thing after another, and it went on and on until I'd really got quite bored. And so I asked him another question. I said, "Oh, what do you do?" And made me have to just hold my face straight was he sat there and he said, "Oh, I'm a retired prison officer." I thought, "Oh, you must have spent your whole life listening to Want Me, Gov. And here you are." You know. And as you went into the meeting and you all sit down and you all introduce yourselves by saying, "My name's Becca and I went over the limit at da da da. This is how I know. And I'm so-and-so and I was going over the limit on the motorway and I got caught by one of those average speed." And they went round and it was astonishing. No, it was nobody's fault. Nobody done anything wrong. Everybody else was stupid. Everybody had an excuse. And it just astonished me. We find it so very hard to take responsibility for the things that we do. So very, very hard. It goes against everything that's in us. And sorry, of all the words in the English vocabulary, is so hard to say sometimes. It's so hard. Because it means accepting that we've done something wrong. And it feels like we've shifted something in the power universe. Because we're admitting to something. And it's so very difficult. Or we do some of these kind of stories. Here's one, which on one level looks good, okay? Sorry, saying sorry doesn't always mean that you were wrong, not even if you're Mickey Mouse, because sometimes it means you value your relationships more than your ego. This sounds, on one level, like a little bit of relationship advice. Rubbish. It's a rubbish kind of sorry. That's not admitting, that's not really trying to resolve anything. It's not really trying to get to the bottom of anything. That's just saying, "Oh, I can be the bigger man, or the bigger woman, or the bigger whoever." Not bigger, just, better. And that's all that really is. That's not sorting anything out. It's not owning it. Here's one, cute little elephant, cross-eyed, heart, lovely. "I'm sorry if I hurt you, but I want you to know this. I love you." Let's concentrate on this bit. "I love you, I really, really do. I'm sorry if I hurt you." That's all about saying you're the one with the problem, really. You're oversensitive. You're just overreacting. I didn't read any normal human being wouldn't have been hurt by that. I'm just saying. But if you're hurt, well, I'm sorry that you're feeling that way. You're not really sorry about you at all. Let's just concentrate on the loving bit. Let's just forget anything ever happened. Let's just do that. This one made me just smile. No, this one didn't make me smile. This one's like a teenage story. Parents in the room know this one. "I'm sorry I can't be perfect." Goes along with, "I'm sorry that you have such high expectations of me," or "I'm such unrealistic high expectations of me that I could never in a million years live up to." That one's all about you, the other person, actually having the problem again. This one made me smile. You can just tick the box. Just tick the box and see which one it goes. "You provoke me." In fact, this one makes me laugh. This is what happened this week. Two of my other children were home alone with me. They were upstairs. One of them was trying to do their homework. The other one was, I think, just trying to be annoying. I was downstairs doing the washing up until I heard the noise. And I basically went up and I could hear wailing from one of them. I said, "What on earth is going on?" "She jammed my head in the door." I was like, "Well, right, that's it. You go to your bedroom. You come downstairs and talk to me." And as she got talking, the aggressor, we'll call her that, came downstairs and talked to me. And I said, "Right, can you tell me what happened?" And she went, "Well, she was just being so annoying. So I sat with my back against my bed and pushed my feet against the door. And she just kept trying to get in." I went, "Mm-hmm." "And what happened next?" She went, "And then I slipped. So the door opened, she pushed in, I got my grip, I pushed back, and her head was in the way." I was just like, on what planet is that ever okay? Which is probably an overstatement of the thing at the time. And she looked at me, she went, "Oh, I'm sorry, but she was just so annoying." I was like, that's still not really an apology. That's not an apology, that's a sorry but. Sorry buts are not apologies. Sorry buts are still somebody else's fault.
Interestingly, the one with the head that was now a different shape, came downstairs, and she just came into the room and she went, "I was very annoying." And I thought, that's hilarious. What a difference. What a difference between somebody who can completely own it and walk in and go, "I was being really annoying." And one who goes, "Yeah, sorry, but, yeah, but, yeah, but, what, Sorry shouldn't have anything at the end. This is the one that works. I know I have hurt you. I know I've hurt you. I'm sorry. Doesn't need anything else. Doesn't need anything at the end. Doesn't need anything in the middle. I hurt you. I can see that. And I'm really sorry." Because this kind of sorry changes things. This kind of sorry gets right to the heart of what has happened. And it deals with it. And it fixes things. A real apology is so powerful. It's phenomenal. Because a real apology actually shows Jesus at work in us. A real apology says, "Do you know what? I used to be like this, but I'm walking with Jesus, and he's changing me, and I can see that, and now I can see that that wasn't good, and I'm really sorry. I'm going to be that different." And it's God at work in us. I like to think of it as apology evangelism. I'm not entirely sure it's going to catch on, but wouldn't it be an incredible thing if at work and at school and at college and at home, we let people see this God work at us all the time and said, "I'm sorry," and make it be different next time. Don't jam your sister's head in the door again. Yeah? Don't shout immediately, take a breath and see if there's a way of dealing with it in a calmer way. Maybe this is the way we show Jesus brilliantly in a day-to-day, everyday life. Because it's something we struggle to do. We struggle to own it. But this is the thing that I kind of am going to finish with. Because it's something that struck me when I was putting this talk together. If you don't own something, you can't give it away. Your apology will never be an apology if you don't know, don't take control, don't take responsibility for the thing that you did in the first place. You can't get rid of it. You know, 2,000 years ago, Jesus came down and lived on earth as a man, and he died on a cross so that we could give him all the stuff we've ever done wrong that keeps us separated from him, the stuff that makes us not fit to walk in his presence, the stuff that keeps us just walking on a different plane in a different place. And he did this incredible thing. And he rose again so that he could come back and walk with us and be with us, and that's what he wants more than anything in the world. And so many of us are so busy trying to camouflage the mistakes we've made so that nobody can see them. Or hand them off to somebody else and go, "I'm terribly sorry, that was your fault because of the way you brought me up." Or we're burying it under the ground and just hoping nobody will notice, like a ticking time bomb. Instead of just picking it up and owning it and saying, could you take this for me? Could you take it? Let's just lose it completely. Owning it is the most important thing we can ever do. It's what Mick's doing when he gets baptized. He's saying, "Do you know what? I lived a life that had mistakes. I lived a life that wasn't perfect, like all of us. But in my baptism, I can represent all of what God has done for me when he sent Jesus down, as I metaphorically wash myself clean of that stuff and walk into a future free of all this baggage." It's an incredible thing. Let's pray. Father God, I want to thank you that you had such an incredible vision for life with us, that you never wanted to be alone. You wanted to walk with us. And I just pray that as we're sat here and as we go home, that we will think about the things that perhaps we have been burying, the things that we've been camouflaging and giving away rather than giving to you. I pray that you'll help us to get so much better at finding that word sorry, that you'll help us just to be able to say it louder and prouder and in a way that carries weight and meaning, that we'll start to be peacemakers, conflict resolvers, that we'll be people who just should bring light into difficult situations because we're able to deal with what we've done. And thank you for the fact that actually when it comes to dealing with what we've done, you did that such a long time ago for us. And I pray that we will walk in that, that we'll daily give you the things that we need to give you. We'll own them and we'll give them away. Amen.